Chapter 11. Conversations by Starlight. The attack was so fast that it momentarily took Nemiel off guard. In the space of a single heartbeat, the Praetorians erupted into a blur of deadly motion, bringing their weapons to bear and charging across the last few meters between themselves and the Astartes. Multi-battle slug throwers pounded at the Dark Angels, the explosive shells bursting in a series of sharp flashes across the ceramite surfaces of their armor. The warriors staggered under the hail of shells, blood spraying from wounds to their arms, torsos, and legs. Urgent red telltales flashed on Nemiel's helmet display, pain flared across his chest, and his arms suddenly felt twice as heavy. A Praetorian shell had lightly cut a bundle of synthetic muscle fibers beneath his breastplate. Brother Sergeant Cole was the first to respond. There was no time for questions or recriminations. The Praetorians were descending on them with the speed of a thunderbolt, brandishing power claws and blazing shock mauls that would make a mockery of their crusader pattern armor. The Terrans staggered backward under a punishing barrage of explosive shells, roaring a curse in some forgotten tongue and returning fire with his bolt pistol. The shell struck one of the charging Skitarii in the chest and head, flattening against the augmented warrior's armor plates without inflicting serious damage, but the gesture of resistance was enough to shock the rest of the squad back into action. Bolters hammered at the charging Praetorians, slowing their advance by sheer weight of fire. Blood and other fluid spurted from minor wounds. Spatters of liquid hissed into steam where it struck the Praetorian supercharged bionics. Nemiel smelled the acrid reek of adrenal compounds and hormone agitators. Off to Nemiel's right, there was a shriek of superheated air as Brother Marthys shot one of the oncoming Skitarii point-blank with his melter gun. The anti-tank weapon blew the Praetorian apart in a shower of sparks and charred bits of flesh. The Praetorian rushing at Nemiel was a massive brute that seemed more machine than man, a composition of bionic joints, synthetic musculature, adrenal shunts, and pitted armor plating. His head was encased in a faceless metal shell, studded with multispectrum Auspex nodes in place of ears, nose, and mouth. His breastplate was decorated, if that was the word, with barcode emblems and small plaques of glittering iridescent metal. Perhaps he was a champion of sorts, or the leader of the detachment, Nemiel couldn't be sure. The Praetorian's left hand had been replaced by a huge three-fingered power claw, its curved edges plated with adamantium and sharpened to a mirror sheen. The warrior lunged at Nemiel with stunning speed, swiping the claw at his face. He knew better than to try and parry something so large. The power claw could easily knock his Crozius aside, or worse, snap it cleanly in two. Instead, he ducked, allowing the Praetorian swing to pass harmlessly over his head, and smashed his staff into the warrior's elbow. The power field of the Crozius struck the bionic joint and fused it with a flash of actinic light. But the Praetorian scarcely seemed to notice. The huge warrior spun on his left heel and brought his right elbow back to smash into Nemiel's forehead. Ceramite cracked loudly in Nemiel's ears, and the impact hurled him off his feet. He landed squarely on his back, his helmet readouts crackling with washes of static. Without thinking, he fired a quick burst in the Praetorian's direction and was rewarded with the sound of shells striking the warrior's armor plate. The Skitarii was just a blurry shape on the helmet's damaged optical systems, fading in and out of existence like a monstrous ghost. The Praetorian moved closer, his claw arm reaching for Nemiel's right leg. A flash of light and another howl of tortured air swept over Nemiel. Marthys's shot vaporized the Praetorian's claw arm at the elbow and blistered the warrior's armored shoulders and chest. The Skitarii reeled backwards, his auto-senses momentarily overloaded. Nemiel dropped his pistol and clawed at his helmet release. He popped the catches with nimble fingers and tore the damaged helm from his head, blinking in the dim red light of Diomat's distant sun. A wild melee was raging all around him as his battle brothers fought against the heavily armed Praetorians. Brother Jung was down, his breastplate torn like paper and stained with blood. Techmarine Ascalon had another of the Praetorians by the throat, lifting the brute off the ground with his servo arm and crushing the Skitarii's metal-sheathed spine. He quickly turned his focus back to the one-armed Praetorian just a few meters away. The augmented warrior was in a crouch, the air shimmering around his scorched armor, his body eerily still as he reset his Auspex nodes. Nemiel snatched up his bolt pistol and took careful aim, preparing to put a round through the Praetorian's throat. Suddenly, a strange trumpeting blurt of binaric code cut like a knife through the sounds of battle, and the Praetorians practically recoiled from the Dark Angels. They retreated a dozen steps and lowered their weapon arms, their chests heaving from exertion and the combat drugs that were boiling in their veins. The Astartes paused, their weapons trained on their adversaries. Cole looked to Nemiel for instructions. But the Redemptor's attention was focused on a large force of armored Skitarii rushing down the roadway from the northeast. They were led by a tall, hooded figure, clad in the crimson robes of the Mechanicum, riding atop a humming suspensor disc. Nemiel rose swiftly to his feet as the figure glided closer. "What is the meaning of this, Magos?" he snarled, his collar nearly overwhelming him.
"Error. Improper threat parameters. Misidentification,"
the Magos blurted in High Gothic. The voice was harsh and atonal, the words strangely inflected, but recognizable. The Magos paused, raising a hand that glittered in the rust-colored sunlight.
"Apologies," he continued,
his synthetic voice more carefully modulated now.
"Grave apologies to you and your squad, noble Astartes. The Skitarii were in seek-and-destroy mode, searching for enemy troops that had penetrated the complex. Your appearance on Diamat is unexpected. I was unable to override the Praetorians' engagement protocols until it was too late."
"I see," Nemiel said curtly. "So it's our fault for rushing here to protect you," he thought. He glanced over at Brother Sergeant Cole and guessed from the Terran's belligerent pose that he was thinking much the same thing. "How is Brother Young?"
"Comatose," Cole growled. "His injuries are grave."
"Let us conduct him to the Forge's Apothecarion,"
the Magos said at once.
"We will repair his body and mend his damaged armor."
For some reason, the Magos' offer took Nemiel aback.
"That won't be required," he said quickly. "We will conduct him back to our ship when the battle is done and let our brothers tend to him."
He studied the hooded figure warily. "I am Brother Redemptor Nemiel of the Emperor's First Legion. Who are you?" The Magos laid one metal hand atop the other and bowed from the waist.
"I am Archoi, Magos of the Forge and former servant of the Arch-Magos Vitalis," he said.
"Former?"
Nemiel inquired. Archoi nodded gravely.
"I regret that the esteemed Arch-Magos was slain 12.8 hours ago while coordinating the defense of the Forge," he said. "As the senior surviving member of Vitalis' staff, I am now the acting Arch-Magos of Diamat."
Off to the south, a deep brassy rumble shook the air. It swelled in volume, the source climbing slowly into the sky. Nemiel turned and saw a pair of ships boosting ponderously into orbit on pillars of cyan light.
"The rebels have had enough," Cole declared.
There was a grim note of triumph in his voice.
"They're pulling out."
"Indeed," Archoi replied. "Your Primarch contacted us 6.37 minutes previously, declaring that rebel forces in orbit are in full retreat."
The Magos raised his arms as if in benediction.
"Victory is yours, noble Astartes. Diamat is saved."
Archoi's synthesized voice fell silent, giving way to the fading thunder of the fleeing transports and distant rumble of Imperial vehicles. A rattle of small arms fire echoed in the distance. The Praetorians stared mutely at Nemiel and the Dark Angels, their augmented bodies as still as statues. Blood and lubricants leaked slowly from their wounds. Nemiel couldn't help but think that Archoi was being a bit premature.
"Naturally, we're very grateful that you came when you did," Thaddeus Kulik said, though the look in the Governor's hooded eyes suggested just the opposite.
The Primarch's sanctum aboard the Invincible Reason was a single large chamber that stretched from one side of the warship superstructure to the other and subdivided into smaller, more intimate spaces by fluted columns of structural steel. Tall arched viewports to port and starboard threw long, sharp-edged shadows across the mosaics inlaid onto the deck and hinted at the angular shapes of furnishings in the surrounding spaces. Fragments of hull plating had gouged the portside viewports in chaotic patterns, refracting the red light of Diamat's sun like a scattering of polished rubies. Johnson typically kept the lighting dim in the sanctum, preferring to work solely by starlight when possible, but out of consideration for his guests, he'd lit the lumen sconces on the pillars surrounding the large, hexagonally shaped meeting space in the center of the great chamber. A carved wooden campaign chair had been provided for the governor, who had been hit in the leg by a Lasgun bolt during the Dragoon's counterattack. A chirurgeon from the Imperial Palace and a Medicae servitor stood a discreet distance away, ready with painkillers should Kulik require them. The governor, a man in his middle years, still wore the battle-scarred carapace armour he'd fought in just a few hours before. A stained compression bandage was wrapped around his right thigh, and an old power sword hung from a scabbard at his hip. His pale grey eyes were bright with pain and fatigue, and though he made a point to relax into the back of his chair, the set of his shoulders was tense. Magos Archoy stood a few paces to the governor's right, his metal hands folded at his waist. He had changed out of his simple mechanicum robe for his audience with the Primarch, garbing himself in the formal attire of his late predecessor. The heavy robes of office were woven with gold and platinum thread, worked into complicated patterns that resembled nothing so much as integrated circuit paths. The sleeves were wide and terminated just below the elbow, revealing the intricate craftsmanship of Archoy's bionic arms. The Magos had drawn back his hood, exposing the polished metal of his lower skull and neck. Data cables and coolant tubes ran in bundles along either side of his steel throat. Auspex nodes and receptor pits were arranged around the vox grill set in the space where his mouth used to be. The Magos had augmetic eyes set into the flesh of his upper face, glowing with faint pinpoints of blue light. His bald scalp was pale and dotted with faint scars. Nemiel couldn't read the Magos at all. Archoy's body betrayed nothing but machine-like inscrutability. A pair of hooded acolytes stood a precise 6 paces behind him, heads bowed and muttering to one another in muted blurts of binaric cant. Lion L. Johnson studied the two officials over the tips of his steepled fingers. He sat in a high-backed, throne-like chair carved from Calibanite oak that only served to magnify his towering physical presence. His demeanour confident and utterly composed. Looking at him, one would never know that he'd been fighting for his life in a space battle just a short while before.
Diomat's troubles are far from over, Governor Kulik, Johnson replied gravely. There are resources here that Horus must have in order to prevail in the coming conflict with the Emperor. As soon as the survivors of his raiding fleet return to Istvan, he'll immediately start putting together a new force, and this time it won't be comprised of renegade warships and former Imperial Army troops.
His gaze drifted to the red-stained viewports to port, his expression thoughtful.
I expect we have no more than 2.5 weeks, 3 at most, before their return. We need to make the most of it.
Kulik eyed Johnson warily.
And what exactly would you have us do, Primarch Johnson? He asked.
The cynical tone in the governor's voice shocked Nemiel. He was standing to the right of Johnson's chair, turned so that he could address the Primarch or the two officials if required. Upon returning to the flagship, he'd seen to the needs of his squad, and then spent more than an hour in the Apothecarium, having bits of steel removed from his body. His battered war gear had been handed off to the ship's armourers for repairs, and he'd clad himself in a simple hooded surplice before reporting to the Primarch. His hands clenched reflexively at the near-insolent tone in the governor's voice. Kulik acted as though Johnson was as much of a danger as Horus, and why not, Nemiel thought. 4 legions had already cast off their ties to the Emperor, and the entire segmentum was coming apart at the seams. Everyone's motives were suspect. The realization left him cold. Johnson didn't miss the tone in Kulik's voice either. He turned back to the governor, his expression an icy mask.
I would have you continue to do your duty, sir, he said coldly. We must defend this planet at all costs. The future of the Imperium might well depend upon it.
Governor Kulik grimaced, shifting uncomfortably in his seat. He rubbed the bandage on his leg, but Nemiel wondered if that was what truly pained him.
My people don't have much left to give, he said gravely. The rebels smashed every city and town from orbit. We don't even know for sure how many people are still alive. There's been no time to count all the bodies, much less bury them.
What of the dragoons?
The Primarch asked. Kulik sighed.
We threw everything we had left into the counterattack once we learned that the company covering the forge's south entrance had been overrun.
The governor had been a military man in his youth. When the commander of the dragoons had been killed in an atomic strike early in the rebel attack, and the Imperial Palace had been bombed to rubble, he put on a dragoon's carapace armor and took charge of the planet's defense. Kulik was a man who took his duties to the Imperium seriously.
I've got perhaps 1 full regiment's worth of troops, cobbled together from 6 units, and most of an armored battalion left, he said, then shot a venomous look at Magos Archoy. On the other hand, the Mechanicum's troops saw little or no action during the attack, so they're likely to be at full strength.
Johnson turned to the Magos and raised an inquisitive eyebrow.
Is that so?
He asked. His tone was mild, but Nemiel saw a gleam of anger in the Primarch's eye. Magos Archoy bowed his head in regret.
It was Archmagos Vertolus's directive that the Tech Guard be employed only for the purposes of defending our forge complexes across the planet, he said. Many of us tried to convince him otherwise, but he said his orders came from Mars itself.
Not that it made any difference, Kulik spat. The rebels sacked every one of the smaller forges and manufactories.
But they failed to seize more than 12% of our primary complex outside Xanthus,
Magos Archai pointed out. The governor glared at him.
And had we not bled to keep them out, I wager that percentage would have been a great deal higher, he retorted, his anger rising.
Now is not the time for recriminations, my friends,
Johnson declared, holding up a hand to forestall further comment.
We have fought hard and won a temporary reprieve, but that is all. Now tell us, Magos Archoy, how many troops can the Mechanicum muster for Diomat's defense?
The Magos paused. One of his acolytes raised his hooded head slightly and let out an atonal squawk of code. Archoy burbled a reply in binaric, then said,
As Governor Kulik pointed out, all of our lesser forges were seized by the enemy and their defenders were slain. Fighting around the southern entrance to the primary forge was also very heavy, and our garrison suffered serious losses. At this point, we can muster only 1,212 Skitarii.
Nemiel saw Kulik grind his teeth at the offhand assessment, but the governor wisely chose to hold his collar in check.
Thank you, Magos,
Johnson said, taking control of the conversation again.
For my part, I can muster 187 veteran Astartes for the planet's defense. I'm still waiting on damage assessments from my battlegroup commanders, but it's clear that all of my surviving vessels have sustained moderate to severe levels of damage, and all of them are low on stocks of fuel, ordnance, and ammunition.
Magos Archoy bowed to the Primarch.
The full resources of our forge are at your service, Primarch Johnson, he said. We can begin resupplying your ships and effecting repairs immediately.
Providing you're resupplied and the proper repairs are made, can your ships repel the next attack?
Kulik asked. Johnson considered his reply.
It's unlikely, he admitted.
We'll hold them off as long as we can, but my ships are in no condition for a protracted battle. Keep in mind, however, that time is not on Horus's side. He knows that a huge force of Astartes is on the way to attack Istvan and could arrive here at any time in the next few weeks. Every day we can hold him off brings us that much closer to victory.
If all we have to do is dig in our heels and make the bastards pay for every kilometre, that's something we've had a lot of experience with,
Kulik said grimly.
And we'll be right beside you every step of the way,
Johnson said with a nod. He turned to Magos Archoy.
There is a great deal of planning to discuss, he began. May I make a small request, Magos?
Naturally, you may, Primarch,
Archoy replied. Johnson smiled.
What I require most right now is information, he began. Specifically, I need an accounting of the materiel that the rebels succeeded in removing from your forges, as well as an inventory of what remains and where it is stored.
Archoy didn't reply for several moments. Kulik turned to regard the Magos, his expression intent.
Your request is problematic, the Magos said at last. The lesser forges were almost completely destroyed, and a great deal of data storage was lost.
Johnson raised a placating hand.
Of course, Magos, I see your point, he said. If you could just provide an inventory of the materiel still stored at the primary forge site, that would be sufficient.
The Magos bowed.
Thank you for your understanding, Primarch,
he replied.
I will instruct my acolytes to begin compiling the data at once.
The Primarch smiled, but his eyes were calculating.
My thanks, Magos Archoy, he said. Now, if you will excuse me, I must see to the needs of my brethren. We will meet again tomorrow to begin discussing an integrated defense plan.
Magos Archoy bowed deeply to the Primarch and withdrew quickly, exchanging a flurry of code with his acolytes as he disappeared into the deep shadows beyond the audience space. Governor Kulik levered himself awkwardly to his feet, waving away the hands of the hovering chirurgeon. He inclined his head respectfully to Johnson, who nodded at the wounded man in return, and watched him limp off into the gloom. After the governor had left, the Primarch turned to Nemiel.
"What do you make of them?"
he asked. The question surprised Nemiel. He paused for a moment, collecting his thoughts.
"Governor Kulik seems like a brave and honorable man," he replied. "How many planetary rulers have we met who cower in their palaces and send better men to die on their behalf?"
"Well, his palace was blown to bits," Johnson observed.
Nemiel chuckled.
"He could have fled to the hills with his people, but he didn't. He honored his oaths, and that counts for something."
Johnson nodded.
"Do you think we can trust him?"
The Redemptor frowned. He studied the Primarch's impassive face. Was Johnson making another joke?
"I believe so," he said after a moment. "How could it possibly profit him to betray us now?"
The Primarch gave him a faintly exasperated look.
"Nemiel, the governor did well enough against Horus's cannon fodder, I'll grant you that," he said. "But the War Master won't just send auxiliaries next time. We'll almost certainly be facing other Astartes as well. How do you imagine he'll react then?"
Nemiel frowned. It was still difficult to imagine the idea of fighting a brother Astartes. The very thought of it filled him with dread.
"Governor Kulik is no coward," he said confidently. "He'll fight regardless of the odds. It's in his nature."
Johnson nodded to himself, and Nemiel saw that he seemed actually relieved by the observation. Could the Primarch actually have a difficult time reading someone as forthright as Kulik? Was this the same individual who united all of Caliban in a crusade against the great beasts? But then it hit Nemiel. Johnson hadn't united Caliban. The plan was his, but the person who convinced the knightly orders and the noble families to put aside their ancient traditions and unite under Johnson's banner was Luther. It had been his oratorial skills, his personal charisma and sense of diplomacy, and above all his keen insight into human nature, that had allowed him to forge the grand alliance that had changed the face of Caliban. Johnson, by contrast, had spent his early years alone, living like an animal in the depths of the North Wilds, one of the most forbidding and inaccessible wildernesses on the planet. He didn't say a word for the first few months at Alderuk, and was always considered cold and aloof even in later years. He was thought of as an intellectual and a scholar, and Nemiel knew that to be true. But now he also wondered if Lionel Johnson, the superhuman son of the Emperor himself, could not relate to the people around him. He could predict how they would behave on the battlefield to an uncanny degree, but he couldn't tell an honorable man from a craven one. Are we all ciphers to him, the Redemptor wondered? If Johnson had so little in common with humanity, what did that make him? Nemiel realized abruptly that Johnson was staring at him. He shifted uncomfortably.
My apologies, Lord, he said. Did you say something?
I asked for your impression of Magos Archoy, he said.
Ah, Nemiel replied. Honestly, I don't know what to make of him. How can a man willingly part with his own flesh and replace it with cold, unfeeling metal and plastic? It seems unnatural to me.
You mean, like Captain Steenius? I think he rather appreciates having a pair of working eyes,
Johnson said wryly.
That's different, my lord. Steenius lost his sight in battle. They were taken from him, not willingly thrown away.
Johnson nodded.
So, you think we can't trust him?
I don't know what to think about him, Lord. That's what I'm saying, he sighed. I confess I might be a little biased as well after our first encounter.
Johnson nodded.
Understandable, he said. How is Brother Jung?
The apothecary's attending him now, Nemiel replied. He suffered severe internal injuries and his body went into stasis almost immediately.
As part of their extensive physical and genetic modifications, all Astartes possessed the ability to survive even the worst physical injuries by entering a kind of voluntary coma that focused the body's energies on basic survival.
The chirurgeon says that he will heal, but there's no chance he'll be returning to action in the next few months.
And the rest of the squad?
Nemiel shrugged.
Numerous minor injuries, but that's to be expected. Brother Ephrael is having his knee mended now and will be fit for duty again within 12 hours.
He grinned.
Just don't send us into battle any time in the next week or so, or half of us will be fighting in our surplices.
Johnson returned the grin.
I think I can manage that,
he said, then rose from the chair.
Go and get some rest. Give your body some time to recover. We'll begin planning in earnest on the morrow.
Nemiel bowed to the Primarch and made to withdraw, but something he recalled from the previous conversation made him pause. My lord! Johnson had already padded silently into the shadows. Nemiel saw him turn, silhouetted against the crimson light streaming through the portside viewports.
What is it?
He asked.
Why did you request that inventory from Magos Archoy?
He said without preamble. The Primarch stiffened slightly.
I should think it obvious, he replied. If we're to devise an effective battle plan against the rebels, we will need a full accounting of our supplies and all available assets.
Nemiel nodded.
Yes, of course, my lord, it's entirely understandable. Only,
he paused,
the request troubled the Magos considerably. In these difficult times, with the War Master in open revolt and armies on the march, it's easy to misunderstand the intent behind such a request.
Johnson did not reply at first. He stared at Nemiel from the shadows, his powerful body completely still.
I'm not a brigand, Nemiel,
he said, his voice quiet and cold. The Redemptor bowed his head.
Of course not, my lord,
he said, feeling foolish now for bringing the matter up in the first place.
I didn't mean that at all, but Archoy and Governor Kulik have already suffered a great deal at the hands of Horus's men. No one knows whom to trust any more.
Johnson's gaze bored into Nemiel.
Do you trust me, Nemiel?
The Primarch asked.
Of course,
Nemiel replied.
Then rest,
Johnson said,
and leave Archoy and Kulik to me.
The Primarch turned away, gliding like a forest cat into the darkness. Nemiel watched him go, a feeling of unease sinking into his stomach.